Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers, and all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of two free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.
Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on a grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, Deft. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
One of the great elements of modern football is the passing game. It makes it very interesting, makes the scoring happen. But one thing you have to have when you have a passing game is you have to know how to play pass defense. And our guest, Timothy B. Brown, brings up a very good question. What came first, man-to-man or zone pass defense? Tim's up with the answer here in just a moment. All right, and it's Tuesday, and we'd like to welcome back our guest that shows up regularly on Tuesdays, Timothy Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Derek. Glad to be here. Looking forward to chatting. But I do I have to apologize a little bit. I just can't defend the quality of my upcoming dad joke.
You can't defend it. Well, sounds like you got a couple different choices on your defense scheme.
I could do man-to-man or zone, but
right.
Either way, I'm not going to defend.
Yeah, your umbrella defense is not working at all here.
No,
so
unless not a bit. It's raining pretty hard.
Right. Well, Tim is alluding to, and we're badly segueing into a recent tidbit that he wrote that he's going to discuss tonight, which was titled, Which Came First, Zone or Man-to-Man Pass Defense? So, Tim, give us the answer to this. Show us your research and what you found out.
It's probably the opposite of what you think it's going to be. Yeah, so, I mean, this arose because when somebody acquires an annual paid subscription on my Substack site, I send them a book, right? They can choose whatever one of the books that I've written and I'll send it to them. But I also, in that correspondence, I say, hey, is there anything you're looking to know about? You know, let me know if there's some topic you're interested in. So I recently had a new paid subscriber and he said, yeah, you know, I've never really seen much about man-to-man versus zone, which came first and kind of how did they develop? And so
it's an awesome question. I never really thought about it.
You know, I had written about it a bit in How Football Became Football and also in Hut Hut Hike, but I didn't really get into it that much. And anyway, so I dug into it again, I guess. And so, you know, you kind of, in order to understand it, you know, you kind of have to go back before the forward pass. So, pre-forward pass defense is basically, you know, they could only run the ball. And so, or offense could only run the ball. So defenses, you know, the seven guys on the line of scrimmage lined up in close formation had seven guys across from them. You know, the defenders just, they were just flipping sides of the ball. And then behind the seven-man front, they would have typically either a 1-2-1, which they often called a diamond formation, or they had a 2-2 in the backs, which they called a box formation. So pretty much it was one or the other. And the box, because they had two guys closer up, was supposed to be better against like teams that like to sweep or something, you know, whatever. So so that was kind of, you know, that's the way defense played before the forward pass. And then when the forward pass came out, the first few years, from 1906 to 1909, you could only throw the pass if the thrower or if the passer was 5 yards right or left of the center, which meant you pretty much were throwing to just one side of the field or the other. You were throwing to the right or throwing to the left. And so most teams only sent one or two receivers out into the play. And so defenses could get away with basically playing zone, you know, whether you were in the 2-2 or the 1-2-1, you know, if a receiver came out into your area or if two receivers came into your area, you did your best to defend those guys, right? And a lot of the forward passing techniques just were terrible. I mean, they just weren't very accurate. They weren't very fast. So it wasn't that difficult to defend them. Over time, of course, the, you know, overhand spiral became more popular. They're able to do some more things. And then in 1910, the rule changed so that the passer had to be 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage and the left-right thing went away. And when that happened, they could like snap the ball to the fullback, who oftentimes was the passer, you know, who might be standing 6 yards deep or whatever. And so then that allowed them to throw to the right, to the left, or over the middle. And so then, you know, kind of in conjunction with that, teams started sending four receivers out into patterns. So instead of the one or two, all of a sudden, like four guys are going out. Now, you know, not on every play, but some people did. And so, and they started flooding zones, you know. And so that became a bigger challenge for the defense. And so by the late teens, they, you know, teams were running zone, you know, flooding zones often enough. The defenses figured out we can't get away with just playing zone anymore. They often called it territories. And so then they started designating kind of man-to-man coverage. You know, the whoever the outside guy was on the defense would take the end, and somebody else would take the second receiver out. And if there was a third receiver, somebody else had to take him. So, you know, kind of things that, you know, you might see in, you know, high school or grade school ball now. But anyways, so, you know, it's one of those things that it all then kind of, you know, coalesced as the passing attack got more sophisticated. They had to go to man instead of zone. And, you know, on the surface, you would have thought, no, it's the other way around. Man's the simplest, right?
Yeah.
You would think that came first, but actually zone came first. So the one of the other things that they did that emerged at least by the mid-20s was teams were playing what we now maybe call a spy, you know. So it was man-to-man, and it was things like, it was a guy like Red Grange. They were going to, you know, Ohio State actually had two guys on Red Grange. Wherever he went, those two guys went too, you know. So, you know, so it's, that was an early form of man defense, right? And then, you know, in 1927, the ball gets smaller. 1934, the ball gets smaller. And just forward passing really, you know, kicks into gear in the 30s. And then gets really more sophisticated, you know, once we've got, you know, two platoon football and full-time assistant coaches in the 50s. And that's really when, you know, more sophisticated defenses, you know, came about. Like you mentioned the umbrella, either this time or last week, the umbrella defense that the actually Landry and guys like that in New York, pioneered. So anyways, it was a slow evolution, but zone came first.
Yeah, that amazed me when I read that, because I guess it just takes me back to, you think about when you're playing a game like basketball, in gym class when you're a kid, you're okay, I got him, you got him, you're playing man. And that's just the natural element of defending a goal to us, even when you're a youth. Of course, my youth football coaches, we never played man to man. They tried to teach us zone, which was usually a disaster. How you're teaching, 11, 12 year olds how to cover zones, and there's gigantic holes in it. There's gigantic holes in the pro game and college game when they play zone. I always wondered, why don't they just let us play man? It's not like the other teams like that much better athletes than us. At least you can hang with people. It's like the quarterbacks can throw pinpoint passes, but they taught us zone. And I guess we were better people for it, but.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, man is difficult. Like, so before the forward pass, whoever was the farthest out defender, whether it was in the 2-2, either the box or the diamond, he was responsible for whoever came running out wide, right? Whoever was carrying the ball out wide, he was responsible to tackle that guy. And in some ways, it was no different than saying, you're responsible for whoever comes your way that's an eligible receiver. I mean, that was a pretty easy step to take. And they didn't, in interior line, they kind of played zone. People were responsible for certain gaps or, areas, but not in the backfield. It was much more, they did that too, even in line. I'm kind of misstating. So anyways, I think it was an easy step to stay in that zone kind of thinking. But then, once somebody figured out how to flood a zone, it was like, okay, we got to figure out something else.
and back those same youth teams, I think the other teams, whether they played man or zone, we our biggest play was a flood pass. And we had a three-layer flood, and I was a fullback, so I was a short guy. I got most of the passes. This was an easy pass, and nobody was there to cover you because they all went with the long guys.
Yeah. Well, and actually in the tidbit itself, I've got a line, I forget who it was, but somebody is saying, how do you defend? What do you do when the offense sends two receivers at the back, at the defensive back? One goes deep and the other cuts in or cuts out. The guy's all, he's on an island. He's got to choose one or the other. So you throw it to the other guy, right?
Yeah, so. And a short guy that's only 2 yards, you either got to have a backer or a DN to cover. And that's a mismatch. Usually, maybe not junior football I'm talking about, but, the upper levels, who wants a back, a defensive end covering a back? That's usually not a good situation. But yeah, I mean, interesting stuff and things like, again, once it, things that you know are there and but you never really think about, which came first. They're just both exist. It's the chicken and the egg. Think they're both there. But I love how you do the history and you do the research on it. And you do this quite often in your tidbits and in your book. So maybe you could tell us how people can see some more of your work.
Sure. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. You can subscribe. And if you subscribe, you'll get every time I publish something new, you'll get an email that contains that story. Otherwise, bookmark it. Just come and visit whenever you feel like it.
All right. Tim, we really appreciate you doing this research and educating us and coming here each week and educate us even more after your writings.
Always a blast. Always a blast.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our broadcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.